a major arcana.
Hmm.
But I thought we didn't have any, but now we've got Prudence in there.
Yeah, I forgot to put on the recorder. Yeah. Okay, we'll go over it again. Okay.
Well, just let me have somebody join us.
Mm-hmm.
But
we don't have a major arcana card in here.
Yeah, we do. I corrected myself.
Yeah.
Where is it?
Major arcana.
There's no major arcana card in here.
There's
no.
No. Okay.
Prudence?
No, that's the Eight of Pentacles.
Eight of Pentacles.
Oh, I heard you wrong.
Okay, let me go over them again. Queen of Swords, card one. Princess of Swords, card two. Eight of Discs, card three. Four of Discs, card four. Card five is Five of Wands, Strife. Card six is Queen of Cups. Card seven is Knight of Swords. Card eight is Ten of Cups. And card seven is seven. Oh, I'm sorry. Card nine is Seven of Wands.
Thanks, Johanna. You know what's interesting also about the Toss deck? Funny, I just thought of it now. Everything has, how would you say, an attribution, a name,
mm-hmm.
A keyword, except for the 16 core cards. So the majority of the deck, minor and major, have titles or attributions, but not the core cards.
Well, in the right of way, too.
Unless you think of king, queen, et cetera.
Yeah.
As being an attribution in and of itself.
Yeah, that's a given.
And we have four repetitions of that. It's interesting. It's just interesting.
Well, basically, I think the attributions are connected to the astrological.
Of the core cards?
Of the minor arcana, of the astrological, assignments.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Who is it? Wang has a very good illustration. Chart. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives also the task. He gives some information on the task.
Since people are, sometimes people don't know astrology, the titles, I think the titles really help. I mean, but you have to really get your thesaurus out and study what the words mean.
Yes.
And how they apply to situations. You just can't take it for granted.
And you have to remember the
time he lived in. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the fact that he was British. I mean, you know, just the tone of the attributions change when you move through time and countries.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Pamela Eakins uses names for the 16 court cards. Like the Queen of Swords, she calls that the Eastern Threshold.
Okay.
And the Princess of Swords she calls Truth. And the Queen of Cups she calls the Keyhole, which is the... And the Knight of Swords, she calls the Warrior of the Mind.
Hmm.
The what of the mind?
Warrior of the Mind.
Voyeur?
Warrior.
Lawyer.
Voyeur, as in to look into?
No, Warrior. W-A-R-R-I-O-R.
Oh, Warrior.
Warrior. Oh, okay. Warrior. Sorry, I thought you said Voyeur of the Mind. As in, oh, Peeping Tom.
Yeah.
Now you know where my mind is at.
Right. Oh, I heard the same thing. I heard Warrior.
Well, some people like to look, you know.
All of Manhattan has telescopes in the windows.
Oh, that's so funny. Thank God. Okay, shall we get going? I mean, we're going to have to double up on characters and things like that, right?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, let's look at the list here.
I did jump ahead to the next chapter, and boy, that's going to be a doozy trying to read that one because everything's in monotone. get your magnifying glasses out. That's the chapter five. Yeah, and we're in chapter four now.
Okay, so dealing with Malkuth, we've got the agents Hazard.
Oh, we're dealing with
Malkuth. Huh?
That should be Hokma, not Malkuth.
No, no, no. The first part of the story is in Malkuth.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
All right. So we got the agent Hazard. And Ball, Lucille Ball, and Bruegel.
I could be Hensgard.
Okay. And then we have the Shmi. I'll be the Shmi. Then we have the television news.
I'll be television news. I'll try.
You want to be? How about being? How about also being the agent Ball and
Ball and Bruegel?
Johanna, you can be Bruegel.
Which one's Bruegel?
She's the one who's not Ball.
wait. Is she the...
Jesus.
Wait. She's the one that's not bald?
She has very severe hair.
Is that the one that goes in and talks with the eyeglasses?
I think she's the one who's more butch. Ball is the feminine.
Wait. I'm going crazy here. Okay. I'm on page one. Is Bruegel on page one? No. Where is she? What page in? Am I
the blonde?
Yeah. No. Ball is the blonde, and Bruegel is the.
The butch looking one. Okay, gotcha.
So you want me to be the blonde?
Yeah, you're the blonde. Cynthia, right. And I'm the butch. Okay.
And I'd like to reprise my role as Jack Faust, of course.
Of course.
He's gotten a little fat in this issue, apparently. And let's see. And we got somebody who wants to play Stacia.
Well, is she just playing
Stacia? Yeah. I think she becomes Promethea. She draws Promethea and becomes Promethea.
Yeah, right.
All right. Mm-hmm. All right, I'll be Stacia.
And then we go to Hokma.
And then we're in Hokma, and, I'm good old Barbara, so.
So we got you. But this is Barbara Promethea Glamored. This is where you get your glamour on there, girl.
Oh, yes. That's just what I look like now. I did, but not now.
So, and I guess, and then the fool, which is Crawley. Crawley plays the fool at the bottom. How about you doing that, David? You want to be Crawley this time?
Yeah, I'll do that.
He doesn't do much. He just sort of is afraid to go up the stairs to the crown. Now, I made a mistake last time. This is for people who actually listen to these tapes, whoever you may be. I thought that one of the things that would happen here is that would be the reuniting of Barbara and Steve would take place here.
I think that's a little bit later.
And that doesn't, in this version, it doesn't happen in Hokma. It happens actually in Kether, which is where we're going next week. For the which is kind of nice, I guess, you know, that Steve wasn't afraid to go up there and hang out, staring God in the face.
We don't have Sophie.
Yeah, there was
Sophie or Wisdom, whatever. We'll have to.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we. I probably just forgot to put that in when I was.
No, it's right here.
It is.
So
we need somebody to do Sophie, and maybe Joy and/or Val may have joined us by then, and we can last see them in if they. Better not come, kids. Okay. All right, here we go. I wanted to point out the at the beginning we have the two Prometheas nude bathing in the fountain, and basically, this particular the image there. For one thing, it's the frumpy barbers in there, and they're both nude. Neither of which fits the iconography of the story at all.
Mm, right.
It just comes up that way.
It looks very Ace of Cups, with a wand shape, actually. A very erratic-looking kind of upside-down fountain.
Yeah, and, well, as I said, just that following the notes on the PDF, that the guy said, well, look, it just doesn't follow. For one thing, Barbara is glamored in this section. She's not in that picture, so the fellow was taken out of things. So on that,
I kind of thought it belonged more in the next chapter than in this one.
Huh?
I thought this image belonged more in the next chapter.
No, it wouldn't, because Barbara stays glamored. So in other words, Barbara hasn't been transformed yet.
Mm-hmm.
But that's neither here nor there.
You know what it could be? When you do printing, you know, you have to have odd, and you have to have a certain number of pages because of the feed of the paper. This may have been just a drawing that they couldn't use, but they liked, and they just put it in.
Well, actually, what I think the argument they gave on the PDF was that the cover was done because they have a different artist do the cover that does the drawing on the side. And he probably did well ahead of the actual production of the story inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But okay. So on that note, let's notice the first thing visually that we have this X
mm-hmm.
with the four colors representing the four elements in Malkuth. Who's speaking? It's not man.
It's
that's Adrian Hazard there.
No, it is not.
It's like off the page.
Yeah, I think it's one of the women. I think it's
it may be me. I don't get it.
No, it's Adrian Hazard.
No, it's not.
It is.
Well, the fellow off to your right, and then the redheaded fellow is saying, "No, Agent Ball, that's a glass container."
Okay.
It's Agent Ball speaking.
Agent Ball.
Okay, so then it's you, Cynthia.
I don't get it. This is what your Bureau of Science wants. We're so eager. We should see a black egg.
No, Agent Ball. That's a glass container. Our find is presently spread in a thin film over the inside of it. We found the original fragment squirming around outside a vandalized New York lockup last year, right after that Trotsky's incident.
That was the rock concert riot with the early Prometheus sighting.
How big was this living fragment thing?
Maybe 5 millimeters. Obviously, it's regenerated quite a lot since then. About a month ago, it started talking. Only in muddled outbursts, admittedly, but it mentioned this woman you're interested in. Apparently, this thing was sent to kill her and failed, according to for its sorry condition. Let's see if we can wake it up for you. Ah, there we go. I should warn you, it's mostly incoherent. Frankly, it seems barely able to hold on any sort of consciousness together for long.
How it moves. That's horrible.
Well, what do you want?
We're FBI agents. We are you and... what are you and what do you know about Promethea?
I must be
elemental, no semi-mental, elementary, embassy. Promethea, didn't she kill me? That was bad. They sent a blot to do a bad job.
Who? Who sent you to kill Promethea?
That was the temple, surely. The memory, many roles of Henry Royce.
Huh? Well, at least we got a name.
That's probably all you're going to get for it now. Come on, let's go back to my office and let it sleep.
Meanwhile, that's the TV news?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, in other news.
Thanks for your help, Agent Hansford. Me and Lucille will check out this Henry Royce.
A suburban homicide intrigues New York. Five swell guys. My pleasure. You take care of yourself, Agent Wiggle. I'm in the house in Queens where the multiple bodies are being removed, not all of the human. I've got swell guy Marvel Hamilton with me. Here, Marv. Can you tell us something? Tell us what's happening? Somebody there.
And then Marv says, well, it's complicated. The resident here, Bruno Schmidt, would seem to have been the mastermind behind the science villain Jellyhead, whose inert bodies that you see. Hollow point bullet that killed Mr. Selleck, however, looks like it came from a supposedly dead painted doll.
But Marv, even if the doll was still alive, why would he return to kill the one minor science villain?
We don't know. No, now. If you'll excuse me, I have to get back to the investigation.
Okay, Marv. Thanks for your time. This is Hal Schnapps returning you to the studio.
Baby, down, down, down I go. Round and round I go. In a spin. No wonder the spin I'm under the bed. A customer. Let me turn this crap off.
Thanks, Hal. Now news, just in concerning the resignation of Mayor Sonny Baskerville.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Wait a minute. I know you. That squeaky kid in the library was Sophie that one time.
Uh-huh. And you were the kitty fiddler with the bad teeth. You still are. Me? On the other hand, I got promoted. I'm the new Promethea while Sophie's away. Promethea is my, what you call it, my sacred identity.
Oh, I get it. You came to me like Sophie, hoping I could serve up a little, magical instruction. Old mages do it better.
Well, first off, it's important to who's saying this?
That's got to be me.
Okay.
Well, first off, it's important to understand the magical symbol of the wand, which represents... Oh, what the heck. I better just show it.
Yes. Okay.
You're a dirty old man.
Yeah, he certainly is.
Okay.
Oh, Jesus, man, I go, oh man, you can kill me.
Yes, well, don't change into clean underwear just yet, darling. I still might. You know, in the 20s, magicians still had style, turbans, tuxedos, and tarts and tiaras, smashing times. Now it's all sigils, stubble, and self-abuse. Apparently, you can still actually do proper magic, I assume?
Don't push me, lady. What do you want?
I want you to do some scrying for me. I want you to tell me where Sophie is in the immateria and when she'll be coming home.
Yeah, what do you want to know?
I just do. Now, do you have a scrying glass? Or does everyone search on the net these days?
I got quartz crystal. Ed Kelly himself never used better. Now, let me see. Don't know I'm looking to see, Sophie, but I'm getting it's hard to all I see is gray.
And now we open up to Etin Arcadia Ego.
Arcadia Ego.
Which is one of those terms that no one knows what it means.
There's been books and books and books written about it. They say it's an anagram.
So I remember, yeah, I too have been in Arcadia. It's nostalgia. I too have been in Arcadia. That's not the full thing, though. That's not, I've been as missing in Arcadia.
Isn't that one of the...
Arcadia, I...
What was that fellow's... came a big movie.
Oh, Holy Blood, Holy Grail had a whole thing on it.
Yeah.
The Da Vinci Code.
Yeah, the Da Vinci Code.
Yeah. Arcadia is being the area of nostalgia? Is that what you're saying, Paul? Reflection?
It's the original paradise.
Oh, it is.
What was the original paradise? It's where the world was created. It's where everything is perfect.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's manifestation, but it's the highest manifestation.
We have Chokhmah as...
the gateway to paradise.
Right.
So it means and in Arcadia and paradise I go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So let's continue.
The ego to represent that we're talking about the higher self and not the lowly constructed ego for Malkuth.
I didn't know that. I didn't know ego, other than being something you put in a toaster, was your higher self.
Well, it's ego.
That's ego. That's a theosophical affectation.
I see.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think ego is probably in yes side. I don't think it's the higher self.
Ego.
There is a theosophical nomenclature. They do distinguish. The words spell exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the idea is, in the same way that you look at the translations and Indian metaphysics, and they're always talking about the self, you know. Usually what they're talking about is they're talking about the ego, they're talking about the higher self, you know, Atman, not the lower self, you know, which is has another designation, Jiva.
But Kabbalistically, the yourself, your being is in Yesod. Your higher self is in Tiferet.
That's where it begins, right?
Right.
But the argument here is that you maintain a core of basic identity with the divine, which is the ego, the higher self. Atman is Brahman. In Indian metaphysics.
Does Indian metaphysics talk of the soul?
Atman is Brahman. Yeah, that's Atman is often considered the soul, but not by people. There's other words for the soul, because the soul is actually something that's more oriented to maintaining the body or being in the body.
I see.
So, but let's go to. This conversation between our two lovelies.
Sophie, this
Barbara.
Is me, right? Barbara.
You want me to be Sophie? Is anybody here
that
to be Sophie?
I think.
Or Joyce?
I don't think they
I think you're designated, kiddo. Oh, Sophie, it's all shining and a rainbow dew. I feel like jewels. I love this friggin' love, this I love you just for existing. I love you.
Oh, Barbara, this is so beautiful.
Yeah, and this is Eden humidity. Is this me? Okay. Can you feel my soul on fire? White wings spreading out, opal at the feather tips. Oh, oh, frig, oh.
So, this is Chokhmah. This is wisdom, of course. It had to be like this.
Wait, wait a minute. I want to take off my clothes. I want to be naked in this experience. This experience.
My robes feel okay. They feel right. I'm somebody new here.
And this place is new and fresh, but it's never been here forever. Just this feeling of gentle, shimmering grace, I guess. What did those four words near the arch mean? Et in Arcadia ego?
Hey, by the way, did you notice that now Barbara has pupils in her eyes?
Yep.
Yes, and she's become boo-boo.
Because she took off the robe of Prometheus.
Yep.
Okay. Now, should I go down or should I go
across?
Right.
Yeah, I think you go down.
Okay. I think this famous incomplete quote from a Poussin painting. And in Arcadia, Arcadia was an ancient Greek state, a complete wilderness where Pan was supposed to dwell, the land before the moon. I guess if the third female sphere is the moon's highest aspect, then this second sphere comes before the moon. This is God as male, the highest male element.
And who are these guys?
They must be the four Tarot knights, or kings. They are all attributed to this place, just like all the queens are at Bina. There's the name of the god, Yahweh, pronounced Yahweh, that expresses the meaning of the whole tree of life. This place, Chokhmah, is represented by the first syllable, Yod. It's the initial expression of energy. It's male. It's fire. It's wand. It's spirit. The second female syllable, He, is all the queens at Bina. Thou is the princes at Tiferet. And the final He is princesses at Melkut. The structure of everything, of being, it's just so splendid.
Yes, and alive and fertile, and I keep wanting to say sexy, but that's not it. Or, if it is, it's not physical sex, not human sex, it's God sex or something.
Ha, God sex, that's brilliant.
Everything's brilliant, this quiet sacred joy, this quiet musk in the air, and that smell like, is that hashish? Which planet represents this place?
There's no planet. Chokhmah is the zodiac, all the stars, all exploding into being, like some glorious utterance or something. And I feel like it's happening now, happening here, this perfect, timeless moment where everything is happening, the beginning, the end.
Hey, look at this. And turn the page. It's the path of wands, a royal road.
Well, this place is God as male, the highest male principle. The wand is the phallus, so all wands are attributed to Chokhmah. All wands, all spirit, all fire, the initiating energy. Just like Bina is cups, compassion, water. Hey, I just thought, water symbol is a downward triangle, fire's an upright triangle. The sun of their union is air, Tiferet, the Star of David, combining the two.
I get it. You were right about the structure of it all. It's so elegant, so simple and lovely. It's just ringing with holiness.
I know. Magic is glorious. The feeling these wands create. I don't know. Wisdom. Just wisdom. Understanding that happens in the womb, dark silence inside us. Wisdom is expressed. It just spills out, unbidden.
Uh-huh. And it's a guy thing? Kind of like this? Ba-dum! Oh boy, explosion. Okay. Oh, Sophie, you were right. This is where all the stars spurt into being.
Barbara, you look so good. This will sound wrong, but I wish we had sex while you were alive.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I feel we can just say that here, honestly, without any misunderstanding. It isn't sex exactly.
I know. It's whispering afterwards. Soul touching soul. Oh, Barbara.
I know love. We love each other. Oh, Sophie, we're at the source.
Yes. Of all existence.
All existence. The moment it begins, the moment it ends, I love you. God sex, it's all God sex. It's so pure and it's so dirty. It's, what's that word? The word that means sacred and profane?
Taboo.
Turn the page and there is the goddess and the god. God Pan. Yeah.
God Pan.
Mm-hmm. Do having an experience together. Okay.
Pan and Celine. The myth where Pan rapes her. Although, it's almost like she wanted that. Like he had to. What a male thought that is. It's like Babylon riding the beast. The celestial goddess. And chaotic animal forest. It's the primal seed. It's mom and dad doing it, humping toward the moment of conception. But it's the conception of the universe. The universe. All the male and female energies pounding in the binary throb of being, on and off, back and forth, in and out. Gravity, electromagnetism, the weak nuclear force, the strong nuclear force. Earth, air, water, fire, this phosphorus angel, copulation. Building like music, building to a crescendo, building to its outburst. Oh, building to, oh, to that first formless, oh, first formless utterance, that, oh, that first expression. In the beginning is the word, and the word is...
Holy crap. I just came. Everything just came. What? Was that the Big Bang?
Give me a second. Yes. That's how it all came into being.
That's women, always insatiable. You didn't give me a second. You wanted a second Big Bang, right?
And look, it's still going on.
It's always still going on. Space, time, the beginning, the end, all the time, all at once. Come, let's walk. I was just thinking about what I learned at Bina. Me presiding over the apocalypse? This is it, isn't it? Revelation, this heavenly light. This is where everything begins and where everything ends. This humming, prismatic radiance. But on an earthly plane, I mean, it's going to be terrifying.
Yeah, this illumination, the moment when the lights go on.
Yes, Barbara, I'm worried about what's occurring back on Earth. Anything could have happened while I've been gone.
I know, maybe something's going on right now. You think it started? The end of the world? They look at each other. Okay. Did you hear something?
I don't know. Just the wind, I guess.
Yeah, it must be rising. All of a sudden, I got all these goosebumps.
Hey, look over there. The colors are changing. It's the next path. The stairs. Is that somebody sitting on them? And there's the fool, the Joker, sitting on the steps at the bottom. I don't believe this. You're everywhere. What are you doing here?
Talking to spirits and delusions, evidently. As for here, in my temple, at Selafalu, it's 1921, and I'm preparing to become the Ipsimus. What are you doing here?
We're looking for Stephen Shelley. Isn't Ipsimus the highest magical grade that corresponds to Keter?
It's higher than Keter. Stephen Shelley, you say? He passed me earlier, heading up the 11th. Here, the fool. You know, I'm ready for Ipsimus. I think I'm afraid you see from here, you can look and behold the vision of God face to face, up the top of the stairs. Don't look at it for too long or you'll never look away.
And they gaze up at the stairs. The fool has his hat in his hand.
Yeah, that's important. Like, that's an important illustration. Yeah.
Oh, Barbara, that's enough. Don't look at it anymore.
Oh, God, I was gone. But if that's where Steve went, that's where I have to go.
Okay. Are you sure you won't come with us, Mr. Crowley?
Oh, I'm already there. I've always been there. It's just like I've been sitting undecided here. You go ahead. Good luck with
Good luck with God.
God, great line.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, I feel like an idiot doing this, but I feel I have to trust the impulse, you know?
Well, that's what this fool path is about, irrational leaps into the unknown. Barbara, I'm scared. Let's hold hands again.
Sure. What are you scared of? If there's something you know about this next sphere, you're not telling me.
It's the highest sphere. One, the crown. You can be annihilated in it. You can fuse with it.
Fuse with it?
Yes. The white light, the perfect experience of God. Some souls just dissolve into it forever. Some souls go into it and don't come back. But then, why would you...
Next, the Serpent and the Dove, Chapter 5 of Book 4.
This is a very... this gave a good... the illustrations in particular, the centerpiece. I don't know, I just felt Crowley speaking through it tremendously. His point of view on the path. What did you think, David?
Well, you're talking about the 11th path?
I'm talking about this chapter being a Crowley tree of life. Kind of take, as opposed to, let's say, who was your mentor?
Pamela Eakins?
As opposed to Pamela Eakins, for example, or Walls, for example. I mean, there's a very different tone.
a very different tone. I think it's a very rich tone. I think it was a fantastic chapter, actually.
Pardon me?
I think it was a fantastic chapter.
Oh, yeah.
And not only what people were saying in it, but the visual parts of it were
The visual was amazing.
Amazing.
You know, that's one thing about black and white. Of course, this is toned, grays and
sepia.
A little bit of red. Yes, sepia. I think it's tremendously evocative, and I'm fond of many black and white decks.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that on the trip here.
Pardon me?
I think it's interesting that the fool is not ready to go on the trip. He's he's not a naive character in this story.
Right.
He seems to know a lot that the fool doesn't, you know, when you think about the fool, you think about the beginning of something. He's like, he's gone through it already and he doesn't want to go any further with it.
Mm. I just got a note from Joy. It's actually a general note on planetary alignments that are going on today. But we are at the end. This is the day of the autumnal equinox.
Equinox, yeah.
So that's kind of interesting that we are here in Hawkmoon at the autumnal equinox.
And I think it's the Hebrew celebration of Sukkot.
Yeah.
Is that where they go into those tents?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Many of the Hebrew holidays fall around the equinoxes and, the change of the season.
But this is the High Holy Days. This is a big change in the year.
Yes.
The big one's always in September.
This is Yom Kippur.
Yom Kippur just passed,
The past, okay.
And Crowley here, I have to say, he portrayed Crowley with some humility.
He did.
Which I was very... In fact, I didn't even... It took me a split second or two to catch that this fool, this dejected, concerned fool, was Crowley. Even though Paul had stated it at the beginning. Yeah, there was a little humility in Crowley, according to our author.
It looks like Crowley doesn't want to go to see God. I mean, he does want to have to face his own issues.
Don't we face our issues all up the tree, all the way up the tree? Of course, facing God face to face. Oh, my gosh.
I think maybe he just didn't want to be absorbed into the God light. He was afraid of losing his ego.
Of dissolution, absorption.
Right.
If you're highly invested in something, you can see why you wouldn't want to necessarily lose it. And that is the classic argument that magicians give for not being mystics. Is they think mystics just toss themselves away into the divine bliss.
Right.
But the thing is that at that level, there is no an individual self is sort of like saying, I'm gonna hang on to the placenta
mm-hmm.
after I'm born and carry it around with me in a jar. It doesn't it's a different point of view, and I've never convinced a magician of my point of view, nor have they ever convinced me of theirs.
Yours being the mystical.
And I've never been known to be not have an ego. So, Do I claim I'm a mystic? Right? I certainly don't claim I don't have an ego.
Well, why would we even think that our mystics are egoless? They have egoless moments, but. I mean, our saints and mystics are our saints and mystics because they're part of humanity. So they have to have all the same struggles.
Well, they do for the most part, but it actually has to do with the sense of agency. Magicians think that, that they can know something outside of the... they can direct the divine plan to a degree.
Right. I never understood that.
Whereas, a mystic realizes that when you understand the divine plan, you're directed by it. You know, and that sounds like you're giving up your own sense of agency. But the self or other issue is not an issue at that level from the point of view of the mystic, from the point of view, apparently from the point of view of the magician, it is.
Now, I have a curiosity about
I've had these arguments with Baal magicians, by the way. Now,
I have no stake in magic one way or the other, but I was just wondering, is it a linear path or a non-linear path?
Well, I don't see how that follows.
Because I think mystics, Christian mystics anyway, make a point that, you know, the mystical path, the mystical tradition, it, once you're on it, it's not linear. You go back and forth, you make leaps, you go backward again, you make another leap. It's not a linear straight.
Well,
that's true
for magicians too.
That's true for magicians too.
What it is that when they show you, when you read the books, they're showing you the map.
Right.
And the map looks like everything is straightforward, but when you actually get around, when you actually start walking the trails, you find that you meander, backtrack, and do all sorts of weird things that that you would have never thought you would have done it by just looking at the map.
Yeah, it kind of makes you humble, either the mystical or the magical path.
But I think overall it's the umbrella of the journey of return, and the thing is the journey of return is up the tree.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And I think
there's another return too, which is returning to the earth, which we're going to...
Well, that's the journey of emergence, but the thing is back into it. But the thing is that, you know, if we're going up the tree, we go up and down. I think we move back and forth on the paths up the tree, but we keep moving upward all the time in our journey.
David, if I understand right, Kabbalists believed in transmigration of souls. In other words, it's a form of reincarnation, but much like the Hindus, I think, one can become a tree, one can become a squirrel, one can become a tiger.
Metempsychosis versus transmigration.
That's right.
That's the difference.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Metempsychosis versus transmigration.
And versus that, reincarnation.
It's transmigration versus metempsychosis. Transmigration being the same thing as reincarnation.
I didn't know that.
That's the difference. The metempsychosis is a Platonic view of it. And actually, that's
important.
Hold up.
David, it's a little hard to hear you. Would you say that again?
I was wondering how you spelled that word, metem.
It's like meta, M-E-T-A.
Okay.
And then there's an M, and then psychosis. You'll find it in the books. It's a Neoplatonic view of the Gnostic, you know, going through the cosmic levels of things, through the planetary paths, and here, of course, you're at where the stars are. So you're outside of the zodiac, and you're at the edge of the zodiac where all the stars are hung. And this is there's that classic thing in the Crowley thing where it says every man a star. This is the point, is that you can be a variety of stars, and that the point of experience of life on this level is to enhance your own star. So we're actually, each of us is a star, you know, or a galaxy for that matter, somewhere else in the universe, and we're having this experience here. But we're really having it, all these experiences, as formative to develop our own solar system, our own galaxy.
I think this particular Chokhma chapter was an attempt visually to represent a bit of silver, a sense of silver, and that the next chapter of gold.
Yeah, it's true. They were following the official coloration of they were definitely attempting to follow the official colors as presented in Crowley's 777 and other places. Yeah, that's
now,
right.
There was the Pan image and Selene image is huge, mm-hmm. obviously, and it's my understanding that Pan was declared dead. Pan is
mm-hmm.
dead. Pan is dead, and there was this tremendous mourning throughout all of Greece.
That was one of the things. There was some sailors were off the coast of Arcadia, and they heard this, this person screaming from the shore. They said, "The great god Pan is dead." There's also a wonderful.
E.O. Pan. Crowley wrote it. E.O. Pan? I have
yeah.
it. Yeah, I have
yeah,
it. Lady Sarah.
There's also a ghost story, or a supernatural story called The Great God Pan is Dead. I think it's by Lee Fanu or somebody. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Not sure
that
who
makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based on this story. And also, Robert Graves has some interesting meditations on where this is in terms of the class. It's just a fragment. It's a fragment. This thing.
Well,
now you have to remember though that Pan was this, you know, lusty goat god, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he was also secretly the all god.
Secretly the what?
The all god.
A-L-L?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As in P-A-N, everything.
Everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the rape of Selene, which means bright and also means moon, represents this. Represents this wisdom as particular things. Now in Kashmir Shaivite understandings. Instead of Hokma being male, Hokma is Shakti.
Shakti.
Yeah.
So
this is where the symbolism diverges a little bit. I mean, you're still having this sort of big, the Shiva that Shakti is copulating with doesn't ever quite manifest. In other words, his phallus is unseen. Because it's pure transcendence. In other words, Shiva never manifests except through Shakti, and the Shiva Shakti thing that's going on here. But that's the Shiva Shakti thing is if you're going to do a correlation. is going to be in is going to be Kether. And then what Hokma would be is it's pure will, which will is love, and love is will, which is exactly the way wisdom is being portrayed here. It's being portrayed as love and will. Or the will of love, the moment of continuous creation.
In the Roman pantheon, was Dionysus Pan?
No.
No.
No. Who was Pan in the Roman pantheon?
Wait, no! Maybe. Wait, Roman Dionysus was Greek. The Roman Pan... there is... From what I don't think there is.
That's
Bacchus would be. You mean Bacchus. Bacchus. Yeah.
Bacchus is the Roman Dionysus.
Who's the Roman Pan, I wonder?
You don't need to. Pan is Pan.
Oh, they just took it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and of course the esoteric meaning of Pan is that you've got this sort of gross image of, you know, this half man, half goat, a randy fellow who I can't ever quite speak to too well. Go to bleep.
He plays the lute.
Yeah, actually, he does that. He inadvertently, he's always chasing after the ladies in the room.
I have an interesting story. My uncle, we're so isolated from nature, living in the city and things like that. My uncle would talk about the male goats. And how you don't understand this mythology until you understand the nature. The male goats, when in heat, you could not stop them. You could not, literally could not stop them. They had to put an apron around them so they wouldn't damage the ewes after they... And he would say, and you would see them, they would be, ejaculating all over the place on the apron.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But the apron was there to protect the ewes, because after, one session, they didn't need any more to be literally raped to the point of injury to the ewes of the herd. So
that was the thing. I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. No, I thought it was very interesting because
interesting.
It is,
but
because
it gives you an idea of the sense of urgency, and I think that urgency is important because that's what urgency means. It means this energetic intensity, unwavering, unthinking, profound. Needing to be profound sense.
I took objection with the remark. She want almost as if she wanted it when Pan raped her, as if she was asking for it. Which is, if you read police dockets, very often. The rapists will say, "Well, she was asking for it."
Well, yeah, that's right. And little girls were being seductive, right?
Right, and it's something that is just so.
The rationalization. It's just projection.
But I'm saying he reflects it in this chapter. He states it in this chapter, which is.
We don't have Selene's point of view in this chapter at all. She doesn't have a voice.
No. And what I'm saying is that's kind of a male fantasy. The other male fantasy is very much acted out by Barbara and Sophie by saying they wanted sex, but higher sex, and so on and so forth. And we know nothing about sex, actually, but in theory, those are two male fantasies that are very, very high up in the male mind.
But also, we do know that in the story of Promethea, Stacy and...
Yes.
...do have... sex earlier on in the story, way back, so that Sophie is not unfamiliar with that.
Right, that is true.
I do know that in terms of for males. The idea of homosexual sex can be absolutely horrifying and humiliating, whereas that may not be as intensely true for women. Maybe that's my projection on fantasy.
That's interesting that you say that. I went to get my hair done. I don't know. Are we still on?
Yes. Should I?
Be
careful because we still have to do the reading.
Oh, the reading. Okay. Okay. All I was going to say is I had my hair done yesterday. When women have their hair done, there's a mirror in front of them.
Uh-huh.
And I could see everybody passing me through the mirror. And there was not one woman that didn't stop and sort of check herself out, whether she had already had her hair done or didn't have her hair done. And in particular, it was the stylists themselves that were almost obsessed with their image in the mirror. Mm. And I think in that sense, you know, there's such a prize on female appearance and female attribution, and likewise probably with male athletes, that, yeah, I do think that there's less horror. You know, it's just oh my goodness.
Well, are we...
I think some of that's changed. Like, I think that men now are more forthrightly... you know, play to the mirror more than they may have
in the past. That's true.
Well, at least in the culture, I think there's a little shift there.
Well, watch TV, that's for darn sure.
Yeah.
You know, you can even see it in the way men are portrayed.
Well, there is a psychological school of thought that homosexuality is narcissism. Is a form of narcissistic.
That's what I was trying to get at. That is the word, narcissism, exactly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that...
love of the self before love of the other.
Yes.
So we all have a primordial self-love, homo love.
Well, they say you can't love another unless you love yourself.
Yeah.
Also, you have to be comfortable with yourself.
Yeah. But I thought that was masturbation, but okay.
Oh, well, whatever. Put that in the pot and we'll get on. Let's get on to the reading because I have...
I do think that Tom Burke hit it on the head, so to speak. When he refers to death, sleep, and sex, orgasm, as being the great unknowns and forms of forgetting.
So let us now go to our 12 card reading and relate this to the story that we just read. Noticing that the first card that we've got is the Eight of Discs, Prudence, which we've obviously not been for the last few minutes.
Yeah.
We have not been prudent.
Okay, the first...
Yeah, I'm puzzled by this reading.
David.
I said that's not the first card.
No.
The Swords was the first card.
Queen of Swords.
Right.
And I think that was a fantastic start to this, the whole reading. It's the Eastern Threshold, it's the beginning of light.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this whole thing was about the beginning of light.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yes.
It's coming.
A dawning. Yeah.
The dawning of something new.
Fire and fire. Right.
That's right.
Right.
It's the dawning of something new in their consciousness.
Right.
Yeah.
It's fire and fire.
It's air of fire. It's the queen
of fire.
Air of fire.
The queen of air in the position of fire.
Although
right.
I do have to say, Paul, there are tarots that do use swords as fire.
Yeah, I know, and I personally, though I've been trying to correct myself for years, do fall into thinking of swords as fire.
I do too.
All the time. But be that as it may, okay, it's air and fire. But the point being here is that. Air intensifies fire, you know, in the way that a forge should.
Right. Exactly.
And if we think of the swords as being of the mind, then certainly these two minds are being changed.
Mm-hmm.
Profoundly.
Right. And they're both queens in their own way.
I also saw them as a one and two as really representing Barbara as the queen of swords and Sophie as the princess of swords.
Right.
Barbara's the queen. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
In a personified case, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Selene is queen of cups.
And in the same way that the Knight of Swords is going to represent Stephen, which is in the arc of influence up there.
Okay.
After the queen of cups.
Right. And Selene would be the queen of cups, definitely.
Yeah.
And ten of cups, satiety, certainly. They were satiated.
Definitely. They felt good. Oh,
right.
they felt totally with contentment.
And it takes a tremendous amount of valor to go up those steps.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we have the interesting thing here of the of the air being the discs, the eight of discs, and the earth being the four of discs, power of prudence. And in some ways, you could say that, though not in a in an energetic sense, that they might represent this energy of Pan that we've been talking about.
Right.
Oh, that's an interesting take. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
You know? And then, of course, then we have the hidden motivation, which is the five of wands. And that one I might need a little...
strife. Well, that's the hidden...
What is the attribution or word that goes with the five of wands?
Strife. And strife is basically a type of competition. It is the...
Or strife can also be the thing that leads to rape.
Mm-hmm.
The five of wands then could represent this, the hidden motivation, which is this, this compelling or impelling,
mm-hmm.
convulsive, which is an interesting way of looking at wisdom as being something so driven, almost normally energetically driven, you know. But definitely as will.
Or strife to overcome, and indeed Pan overcomes Selene.
Selene is the Queen of Cups.
Right.
And definitely that makes sense in terms of her being the moon.
She's in the future outcome, whereas the five of wands is in the hidden motivation.
You know what? What I'm getting from the Selene Pan thing is that Selene knew it was her duty to mate with Pan, even though she did not want
to.
It wasn't her desire, exactly. Her desire and her duty make strife.
Now there is an astrological thing which they talk about the different phases of the moon. That she came after a certain phase of the moon, after the third phase, she was the second phase or something like that.
Right.
And I'm not exactly sure what was meant by that, if we're talking about the waxing or the waning or the buildup in between.
To the full moon, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it probably is the full moon. But and it may be just that, you know. Again, it is...
and it's the beauty and the beast. Now, what's the product of their union...
Mm-hmm.
Of raw nature and cosmic power, say like
right.
the Selene, is the aftermath.
Well, I think of it as Earth and Moon.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the moon organizes copulation
mm-hmm.
on Earth.
Right.
So. The necessity to go forward and to procreate is a necessity of the earthly realm. You know, vegetation, animals, humans, etc., etc., etc.
Right.
No?
Yep. Gotcha.
Yeah?
Yep. I'm just...
I was just looking also, because we have three core cards, in terms of the contrapositive, is the Page of Swords the contrapositive for the Queen of Cups?
I'm not into
it. What's his name? Just had a.
Yeah, let me see if I can find that.
He just did a thing on that. I didn't read it though. He had a blog on that.
Right.
This was on Cups and Wands. I beg your pardon. It would be Cups and Wands. The Queen of Cups and the Knight of Wands are opposite.
Well, that would make sense.
Yeah. So the Queen of Cups contrapositive would be the Page of Swords. Of Wands. So we don't have that here. I was just looking to see if there were any contrapositives within the reading itself.
Well, you know.
Is anybody else interested in that and play with that? Or
I haven't played with it yet. I'm sorry, I haven't. I mean, life gets in the way, you know. Prudence.
Reading. I mean, nine cards is a lot.
Yeah.
To do, let alone bringing contrapositive with it.
Yeah, if you bring in contrapositives, we're going to have
very unwieldy,
actually an
18
card reading.
Yeah.
Let's look at the. But actually, if you get used to reading the contrapositives, then what you automatically do is you automatically import it into the.
Into what you verbally say or think about the reading,
But let's think of this last thing. In terms of the arc of influence, we have the Seven of Wands. And I'm just curious of if anybody has
Seven of Wands? Yeah, Seven of Wands is valor.
Position. And what I said was, it takes a tremendous amount of valor to go up those steps.
Yeah, courage.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, another word for valor is courage, and I think that's what it's about. It's moving up those steps with courage.
Mm-hmm. And that would also make sense.
They really don't know where they're going.
Well, yeah, it would also make sense that at least Barbara's still seeking her Knight of Swords, her Stephen.
Yeah, but valor is even more than courage. It's something integrated in your soul.
We'll call it the courage of your convictions, then, because that's what it's about. That's what it's about.
I think valor is a trait, whereas courage is something that happens from time to time. One can be courageous in one moment and cowardly in the next.
The etymology of courage means core, which means heart, and it's the thing of being a wholeheartedness. Whereas valor represents a more of a vision of seeing things in a whole way. I think Johanna was approaching the difference that we would want to make with them. Because
the dictionary says that valor is a noun. It's great courage in the face of danger, especially in battle.
So that makes them. But
etymologically, it might be different.
Well, look at this. You have here, battle. You have strife as the battle. That's the five of wands. Now, the value, you need the seven of wands to overcome the battle that you see in strife. Strife is the battle card here.
Uh-huh.
Now,
that the seven of wands then is representing the victory of serenity of the wands, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting numerologically is that sevens and fives are often very difficult cards at each of the sets. But here, and historically, odd cards are considered luckier than even cards, if you go through the centuries. So there's some sort of...
Well, even cards, you're stuck. Odd cards, you've got a chance.
Right. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah,
not that...
You do numerology on valor. If you spell it V-A-L-O-R, it comes out to a 5, which is the strife card.
Interesting.
And if you use a V-A-L-O-U-R, it's a U, it adds up to an 8, which is what we started with the 8 of Wands, which is prudence.
Mm-hmm.
Except one is wands and one is prudence. One is discs.
Mm-hmm. But it's also manifestations, a manifestation of something new.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think valor works. I think either courage or valor works fine.
I'm sure it does. I was just interested in the etymological background.
Yeah, well, here it is. Here's another. It is also needs. It also is accounted for value or worth. Okay, strength of mind in regard to danger. That quality which enables a person to encounter danger with firmness. It's personal bravery, courage, prowess, intrepidity, valor, value and worth. It's almost, you know, a fireman who goes into a burning,
yeah,
a burning building.
You say that firemen are full of valor.
Yes.
I mean, they have courage, but they have courage that's used over and over again.
Almost
a habitual courage.
Right. Okay. It's disregard for their own personal safety and putting the value of another life beyond their own.
Yeah. So it's definitely, at first sweep, I thought, this is an interesting thing because, you know, here we are, we're at this, you know, chokmah, you know, profound cosmological wisdom. You know, I thought it would be overrun with major arcanas.
Mm.
And there's not a one, is there?
Yeah, it's all what you do. It's all within your own actions. It's not an initiatory. It's within your own actions.
You're not compelled. The majors, the introduction of majors in this context would be, you know.
But the very way that we've been talking about the pan thing and the urgency of you know, that this represents, as it were, the, you know, the first expression of existence, of the existence. The first jism of existence. This is it, you know. Pop.
Mm-hmm.
We're there. In the Kashmir Shaivite thing, you have Shiva Shakti, which is Keter and beyond. And then you have the three things are will, knowledge and action. So
that's very interesting.
Well,
knowledge and action.
Action, and then of course, immediately after those three, those are the supernals, which represent a triad, those are supernals. So they're not action as we would understand action. It would be all energetic action type thing. And so, obviously, knowledge there is at the same level as the understanding, and the and then, of course, what happens is then you have Maya happens, and Maya is a reproduction of the five things that have come before, two of which are in Keter, which is Shiva Shakti, and you have what's called the five Kanchukas, and they all represent limited manifestations of these supernal qualities, and they ultimately boil down to the five senses. And this is the tattva system that you can see in a variety of things.
I was just thinking of these terms that you gave out. I found them very interesting in terms of the breakdown, the major breakdown of the tarot. I thought of knowledge as being the majors, action as being the minors, and will as being the courts.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't know if I've got it near at hand, but if you go to the PDF file,
mm-hmm.
there is where they, particularly, it's page 115, which is where they have the Poussin painting,
mm-hmm.
which is this famous. This painting, by the way, has had tons of people writing about it.
Yeah.
Apparently, he was in some kind of Poussin was in a was initiated some strange secret society, and what they're doing is they see this. This Acadia ego is inscribed on this old stone that they're looking at, and but apparently, if the way that I've seen this picture unpacked is that way in the background you see there's a cliff in the background. It's actually a castle, and this is a great reproduction. And then each of the characters represents something. a lot of unpacking going on there. And that actually, what you're looking there is that is a tombstone or a grave site. And the thing I wanted to tell you down there is where he has the Yahe Vahe expressions, Chokma as Yod, the fire of wands, Bina He, the female, the princes of Tepereth, Baal, the male, and the princesses at Malkuth, Hay, female, which is a classic
standard,
breakdown.
Yeah, it's the classic, yeah. Yeah.
Which page are you on, Paul?
It's 315 of the PDF. That's the active PDF. But no, actually, I take it back. It's 312. Looking at my thing wrong.
Thank you.
I'm sorry to go back to the Arc of Influence. But Johanna, or anyone else for that matter, could you expand on the term satiety? Because the Ten of Cups, as well as the Ten of Pentacles, are these joyous-looking cards.
Well,
I've always used that term for the Ten of Cups as the fountain of love. And that's better for me in this particular context, I think. Society founds it's too personal to me. Fountain of love is more impersonal. I mean, it covers a lot of ground. Where satiety kind of goes inner.
Yeah, well, the rainbow is the universal symbol of a covenant between God and man.
Right.
One of the things that I've tended to do is I've always seen that the arc of influence as representing the next level that we haven't reached yet. In other words, it's sort of like a preview of what's happening. In other words, it's talking about Keter.
In our story, in Promethea.
Right.
Okay.
So, for instance, last week, you may not have this at your fingertips. Last week, the arc of influence was the Hierophant, the Eight of Wands. Which you notice we got again this time, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, we didn't. No, we didn't get the Eight of Cups.
No, we got the Eight of Pentacles for the
Eight of Pentacles this time. And the Two of Cups. So you can see how the Arc of Influence from last week, the Hierophant, so in some ways we had a foreshadowing, even though we don't have any major arcana in the reading that we had this week. From last week, we have the Hierophant, that there is a an initiatory thing from...
Well, I mixed up in my head Knight of Swords with the weight Knight of Swords, but actually this is the King.
Yeah. And then you have...
Flavor.
That's right, I mixed the same thing. Thank you for that.
I just caught that, David, for myself.
Yeah, if you have a Toph deck, that's the deck you should be playing with, or at least a handbook of Crawley Tarot or something, so you can look at the images. From last week, the Arc of Influence was the Eight of Wands, which is swift, which again the sense of urgency that we talked about, and then the ninth card was the Two of Cups. As love, which of course become embodied in this week's reading with the Queen and the Princess of Swords. So it's an interesting. It's just a way I've been tending to read these things.
The top images. To me, there's nothing very earthly, easily identified with in the images. They're beyond. They're on another plane. Whereas Waite's images, Pamela's images, are more identifiable, so to speak.
They are.
Yeah.
Well, you think you look like the King of Swords, or the Knight of Swords is the King of Swords.
Right.
To me, that's the will to transcend. And the thing is that that King represents that energy, the will to transcend where I've been. And that's certainly in the arc of influence. That's where those two women are. They're,
yeah,
they're moving into
they're moving up the stairways. Yeah.
Right. Right.
They're moving into a new energy level, and the Ten of Cups to me is all about love, and that they're both experiencing that in this whole storyline, and then the last card, the valor or courage or whatever you want to call it, that's where they move out of where they are personally and move into a transcendental state.
Well, I have a new take on the word satiety. To me, given what you've said, David, thank you. It's that in this story, it's an expression of satiety as having sort of been done with the earthly plane, Malkuth, etc.
Yeah, that fits very well, I think.
Yeah, and the ability to go forward, having sort of been finished with
Malkuth
in the earthly realm. Yeah.
Yes, satiety has.
Wouldn't it be lovely if we were in the same place?
Satiety has a very dual meaning. It can be almost gluttonous in a way.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm full, don't give me any more. I mean, any Italian feast, you know, come on, stop it already. The fifth entree is like
that. Have another bowl.
Yeah, but I think that's where Crowley was coming from. He was coming from gluttony.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Never enough,
that's right.
Never enough.
Well, in some ways, though, we don't see Crowley pictured in this in the reading in terms of the cards. In other words, his place is the fool in that. Though obviously there he doesn't come through in our reading of these cards. I don't see him particularly, unless he represents.
He represents society, I think.
Huh?
He represents satiety here, satiety. He represents that because he's overstuffed.
He's
not willing to go on any further with us. He's been there, he's done that. He doesn't want to go any further.
Yeah, he knows. Well, he knows he's going further. He knows he's going. He knows he's already gone there, but there's a part of him that wants to stay.
He's terrified of oblivion. He's terrified of losing his personal Crowley-ness.
Yeah. Right.
And in that way, if we were going to look for him in our spread, I would see him not in the Ten of Cups. I'd see him in the Four of Discs.
You know, I think that's a very human. I'm not criticizing Crowley in this context for that sensation or that feeling or that concern. I mean, most people have the same concern. I mean, there's no.
And the reason if I was looking for it and saying how he might fit into that, well, it's, for one thing, it's the Earth 444, and it's power. And power is what says no to love.
But Paul, looking at his picture, the way the author is depicting him, he doesn't look like he's in his power. He looks like he's wiped out.
This is true.
Yeah.
This is true. But also, we're talking about the earth element, and the earth element is least dignified or least exalted in this position of going into Keter.
Yeah.
It's Keter's great desire to have Malkuth. So it's a paradox.
It is a paradox. And that's also the issue of the Four of Discs and the Eight of Discs that we had in the general reading. But you know, as I said, that's pushing it.
Am I wrong? But in the Weight Deck, Eight of Pentacles is the worker, the gentleman working hard at his bench.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's the way Weight expresses. There's quite a divergence between the two decks, I do have to say.
Right.
Oh, in terms of the imagery, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the imagery, you know, there are a lot of people, Mary Greer amongst them, who would say the imagery is what the meaning is. And
with all the decks that are out there, that's it.
Yeah, I know. Actually, Rachel says something similar. I mean, her.
I think Johanna would agree.
Yeah. I, of course, in my dogmatic, abstract, masculine way, and I'm busy doing my little numerological.
No one would object to that. Johanna's very into numerology.
I know. This is my argument with my gurus of racial bearing. This is not my argument with you guys. That's why they're my gurus, right? So I can have arguments with them.
Well, you know, there's mathematics, and then there's the quality of number. And numerology isn't the science of math. It's the quality of the numbers. And to me, that makes it a whole... It's almost like a quality of a color.
Well, you know, I'm going to use the numerological symbolic aspects of number as the basis for divination. And
I think that's very wise.
Well, the other way is to use astrology, which is a particular form of divination.
Mm-hmm.
And astrology has always been sort of the whipping boy of the anti-divinationists. Hey, that's a good word.
Numerology has recently taken quite a bit of a hit, too. I wouldn't esteem numerology over astrology. All I can say is astrology, simplistic sense, is beyond me. I accept myself that way.
But, you know, numerology, and a normal numerologist, I look at them and look at them, but I don't use them as authorities. I go back to other symbol systems rather than using the numerologists themselves as authorities.
I think in the Marseille deck, and you really do need to use your numerology.
Yeah, David, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, you know, you two equated the Ten of Cups to the Four of Discs in power and Crowley from both positions. In satiety, if you work that out numerologically, it comes out to a four, and that goes back to power then also. So that's interesting.
How so, David? I don't get that at all. It reduces to a one. I don't see how...
Now you spell it satiety. It's S-A-T-I-E-T-Y.
Oh, so sorry. Okay.
S-A-T-I-E-T-Y. Yeah.
So what he's doing is he's taking the word satiety and giving it a numerological equivalent.
Yeah, you did that before too, and I find that very interesting. I never thought to do that with Crowley's death.
You know, the word satiety means the revulsion or disgust caused by an overindulgence or excess. That's another definition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's too much
the opposite
of a good
of what
thing.
We were saying.
Too much of a good thing.
Too much thing. Of a good thing.
Yeah, it makes you sick.
Yeah.
Well, I think that we've pretty much wrapped it up for this week. Does anybody got anything they want to bring up? I do realize that the next chapter, which is Golden White, won an award for its startled attempt to... and so the first part of it is all Golden White, and then we have a chance to see the full zodiacal and planetary tree of life, and then of course Barbara and Steve go off to Never Never Land, and
they're Adam and Eve, huh?
Yeah, they do get reborn, actually. And Sophie suddenly finds herself awake.
This is a huge chapter, isn't it?
Oh, no, I see. It isn't.
I'm sorry, David, it's not.
I thought it was, it's all chapter 5. I thought it ended with chapter 5. It goes on to 6 and 7. I see.
Okay.
Yeah, yes, yeah, and yeah, there's, this book 4 has an extra chapter in it. They've all got 6 chapters except book 4 that's got a 7th. And of course the 7th is going to go through the judgment, and it's going to go through the tower and the devil, and some of the classic Thoreau images are going to be coming back to us. And of course judgment, the higher court. And book 4 actually ended the series for a while, and there was a slight hiatus, and then the last book, which is book 5, comes out and finishes off the story arc, which is all some of the great esoteric stuff will be over after next week. But I think that the full story arc is worthy of appreciation to persist through it. Just since we've done so much already, it's only a few more chapters. Yeah.
Has anyone given a thought to what we'd like to do after the next book, after we finish Prometheus?
Well, what I was thinking is I've got a couple of things on mind. One is we've got changing platforms to Skype. And the reason we're going to change, we'll try Skype for group things, where we'd all be Skype together. We'll see if it'll work, or see how steady it is. If it isn't reliable enough for us, then we'll go back to using the teleconference. But the teleconference.
How do you get more than 2 people on Skype?
Visually,
why would we? What's the advantage if we can't do
wait a minute. Listen to the second part.
Okay.
Listen to my, because part of the reason why we're moving platform-wise Skype is that I wanted to through Tarot Town, which is part of Tarot Professionals, we would advertise. And that would mean that we'd get a lot of more. We may get more people from across the pond.
That means that we would be messaging, as opposed to.
No, we would be talking.
Oh, I didn't know it. Skype had that capacity.
No, well, we have messaging capabilities. Everyone has in Skype.
Yeah, you have messaging capabilities, but we can do conference calls from Skype where you can get. I don't know, 5, 6, 8, 10 people on the same call.
What's the advantage?
The advantage is we can get people from England.
They don't have Skype in England?
They do.
They do, yeah.
I'm sorry, they don't have teleconferencing in England?
But it would cost them a lot of money.
I see. I beg your pardon, of course. Okay.
Whereas Skype is, particularly if we're all on the same system, is not going to cost them anything.
I see.
Also, that if we're going through Tarot Town, since Tarot Town is based in England, we'll be attracting more things. I thought the other thing is that we would have an interlude where each people could do one of a kind classes. Of various sorts, like we did last time with you and Johanna, Cynthia, and then.
I hope I'm able to. I've been. It's a big adjustment going from working 3 days to working and babysitting 3 days,
mm-hmm.
And it may end up being 4.
Well, we're also thinking of changing the time. Tuesday nights.
Uh-huh.
And, maybe 7 o'clock or something like that. Of course, that would mean it would be midnight for England people.
Oh, that's not too good.
Well,
them.
Yeah. Hey, guys, I have to go. I'll see you next week.
Yeah, right. I do, too.
David.
I have to get moving. I have a doctor's appointment, dears.
Are you okay, Jenna?
I'm going for, a Doppler test on my legs. So I want to get there, and I got other things to do today.
Good morning, this is David.
Has left the conference.
So,
thanks, everyone.
Okay, bye-bye.
Alrighty.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.